Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. We woke up to rain. We woke up to snow. We woke up to Donald Trump sweeping 5 Northeast presidential primaries. Hillary Clinton pivots toward her presumptive Republican opponent. And the Dakota political junkies arrive to talk about the impact of another Super Tuesday on just another South Dakota Wednesday. We're joined today by Seth Tupper. He's an enterprise reporter with the Rapid City Journal. Seth, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I don't have Seth right now, and I do have Denise Ross, perhaps. She's editor with Black Hills Knowledge Network, South Dakota Dashboard. Denise, welcome to Dakota Midday.
I'm here if you can hear me, and I could hear Seth.
So I think everybody could hear Seth except me. Seth, are you there?
Okay. I'm here, yeah. I don't know.
That's all right.
Everybody can hear me.
We're all good. Seth and Denise are both here from Rapid City. Good morning, and let's talk a little bit about presidential politics right away. A lot of gender talk last night with Donald Trump saying that Hillary Clinton would only get 5% of the vote unless if she were a man. And how does that sort of roll out to our representatives, Kristi Noem, for example, John Thune? Do they throw their hat in the ring with Donald Trump yet? Seth, you want to get started on that?
Well, yeah, as far as the comment, I mean, at this point, you know, it's just another Trump comment, right? I mean, he throws out stuff like this every day, and people are outraged, and then he says something else, and they're outraged about that. So, you know, whereas with anybody else, that comment might have a huge impact on their chances. With him, it's just something else that probably makes no difference. And I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, Senator Thune has been very careful. He said that he would support the Republican nominee. Representative Noem has said the same thing. Neither one of them have come out and you know, gone gangbusters for Donald Trump to back his nomination, but they have indicated they'll support the nominee. Maybe they're suspecting that you know, there'll still be an open or brokered convention, and they won't have to support Trump. I don't know, but I don't think we'll see them probably jump on the Trump bandwagon until they have to.
They're playing their cards close to their chest, Denise. Is that typical, or is this sort of a Trump phenomenon?
Well, I think this is a unique year in so many ways, and. you know, the Republican Party, I don't think, has any more loyal foot soldier than John Thune. I mean, even when he was back in 2002 losing his own congressional race kind of in a very slow and painful way, or I should say Senate race against Tim Johnson, President George W. Bush came out here to Mount Rushmore and actually probably hurt him because a massive drought was going on. And the look on his face was absolutely that he was in pain, but the words that came out of his mouth were nothing but support, nothing but praise for the president, you know, and even behind the scenes, off the record from his staff, you never heard any kind of bitter comments, any kind of complaining. And so this is a completely different situation, but I do think you'll see, as Seth said, sort of like the bare minimum level of support. And that, what's your definition of support? Does that mean you're not campaigning against them, you know? And I think that the bigger question for the Republicans at Thune's level now, he's the number three Republican in the Senate, is that you have to worry about holding the Senate. You have to worry, even people are talking about the House shifting around a little bit if Trump is at the top of the ticket. And so it's a much more complicated equation for Thune, but he's never been anything but loyal to the party. And so if the party ends up, you know, in a mass way, rejecting Trump, even though he might be the nominee, then I think you'd see Thune in that camp. But otherwise, I think you'd see him, again, being a loyal foot soldier.
Either way, an eye roll is probably not a good plan. It has to be a little more strategic than that, right?
Right.
His response. Let's talk a little bit about candidates coming here to South Dakota. Seth, is that something that we can look forward to?
Well, yeah, every time we have a big round of primaries like we did yesterday, and the next morning I always look to see, okay, what, you know, where are they at with delegates and what might that mean? Of course, in 2008, we had the close race between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, which brought both of them to the state, which was kind of a thrilling time for people who follow politics. And, of course, now with Hillary Clinton seeming to have things all but wrapped up, it doesn't look, you know, too likely that she would campaign in South Dakota. I believe the Democrats award their delegates proportionally here, so she's pretty much guaranteed to get some delegates from South Dakota, and probably, you know, isn't going to need all of them. On the Republican side, it's really interesting because, you know, with our primary June 7th, I think there's five or six states that have primaries that day. One of them's California, which you would think would probably soak up most of the attention. California has 170-some delegates that are awarded winner-take-all, I believe, on the Republican side. So if Trump, you know, still needs delegates at that time to get a majority, you'd think he would maybe commit most of his resources to California. But, you know, South Dakota's would be in play, and, you know, the way that he goes around the country on his jet, you know, maybe he would pop into South Dakota, you know, to Sioux Falls and Rapid City or something for a quick appearance. So, you know, I wouldn't rule that out, but of course we'll have to see between now and then where how many delegates he amasses and how many he needs when it comes down to that last primary day.
Denise, any thoughts on candidates visiting the state?
Yeah, I do look for especially the Republicans to come here. Because that race is still going to be up in the air. I hear the talking heads on cable TV say that South Dakota is a cruise state. I don't have any inside knowledge that that's the case. You know, we do have some strong evangelical Republicans, but we also have a lot of libertarian-leaning Republicans, and I think those types of folks might be going more for Trump. It just depends on how active each of those groups are in the party structure itself. But I, as Seth said, I wouldn't be at all surprised if Trump landed his jet in Sioux Falls for a couple of hours and did an event there and then went on out to California. I would look for Cruz and Kasich, actually, to be on the ground a little bit more trying to drum up some support here. But, yeah, I think South Dakota, once again, will get some presidential visits, candidate visits here, as we did in 2008.
Seth, are we a Ted Cruz state?
That's a good question. You know, this is kind of goes along the point of will we get any attention. I haven't seen that any polling has been done in South Dakota at all, which is probably not a good indication for you know, our prospects of getting candidates here, because we matter so little that nobody has done any polling.
I got a call yesterday wanting to know if I was going to vote in the primary, and I said, "Well, I'm an independent, so I can't vote." And they said, "So you will not be voting in the Republican primary?" And I said, "No." And they said, "Okay, goodbye." So I think they are doing a little bit of polling, perhaps, but
just the early signs of it. Maybe. Yeah, Seth, right. Go ahead.
Well, and there you go. That might be a sign that you know, people are starting to look at us finally as a place where they might need a campaign. But, yeah, among the candidates, what's interesting is John Kasich, you'd think, would be more of the type of person who typically runs from South Dakota. He reminds me of somewhat of Mike Rounds and John Thune, more of a middle-of-the-road type of Republican, not with the outlandish personality. So, but, you know, he's so far behind, and, you know, it's hard to say. With Trump, you know, I wouldn't make any predictions at all about what he will or won't do. So, you know, I guess the conventional wisdom would have to be that like a lot of the Midwest so far, South Dakotans would probably go against Trump, but then would they go for Cruz? I'm not so sure. And then, you know, whatever the status of the race is at that time, if it looks like Trump is a foregone conclusion to win the nomination, that might have an impact on how people vote as well. So it's going to be one of the more unpredictable outcomes we've probably ever had in a presidential primary in South Dakota, I'd say.
Denise, how does this work? If a candidate comes through, who has to show up for them from the state party leadership?
Well, I don't think anybody's legally required to be there, but, right. You know, that's a really actually an intriguing question, because you'll start to see, you know, if there are delegates who want to be wooed by these people, I'm sure those people will be there. You know, I think this is likely you'll have some Republicans who would stay away from one candidate's event or another because they're so loyal to a different candidate. But then I think, you know, especially in the case of somebody like Trump, and I was able to be at one of Obama's events in 2008 and then when in Rapid City, and then Hillary Clinton came to Memorial Park and was downtown, you just have curiosity about these personalities. And with Trump, I think that would be magnified exponentially. People who just want to go see him because of everything that's happening right now. And as they say, nothing succeeds like success. And I think that's a big reason why you're seeing his percentages increase. People want to vote for a winner. It's something in the human psyche. And so more, as he acquires more votes, he gets more votes. and in the next round, and more people want to come and see him. So if he does come through South Dakota, it's probably going to be quite the spectacle. Hmm.
Seth, we haven't talked about Bernie Sanders. Any chance that we could see him in the state?
Well, you'd have to think after yesterday's results, probably not. You know, it's hard to say, but, you know, the rating appears to be on the wall more so, you know, after yesterday. And so, you know, by the last primary day in the nation, will he put up the effort and spend the money to come here to South Dakota for our few number of delegates? It's hard to say, you know, but I would doubt it.
Seth, let's talk a little bit more about the Democrats in the state. They have this McGovern Day dinner coming up. Tell me a little bit about that and why it's sort of making news, the invitation for it anyway.
Well, it's an annual fundraiser, you know, named for George McGovern, obviously. And there's been some talk on the political blogs. I saw Pat Powers at the Dakota War College had posted about how the Democrats used Stephanie Herseth Sandlin's name and image, and also included a message from her on invitations. And of course, that sets off speculation. Well, is that because is she looking to get back into politics sometime in the near or distant future? Could be that, or it could just be that you know, she's, you know, the most likely person to influence people to come to this fundraiser, and she has probably the highest profile of any Democrat in the state right now, and it's a big draw for an event like that. I also, you know, continuing along the presidential theme, I saw that the Sanders and Clinton campaigns are both sending representatives to speak at that event. Hmm. So that might be our first little taste of presidential campaigning in the state, not from the candidates themselves, but at least from representatives of the campaigns.
Denise, you want to weigh in on Stephanie Herseth Sandlin and what you make of that invitation? And
yeah, well, I mean, I think all of the political intrigue, or 95% of the political intrigue in South Dakota, is around the 2018 governor's race, and I think that invitation just added fuel to that fire. Hmm. On the Democratic side, what I've heard, and maybe Seth has heard a little different, but, you know, is Stephanie going to run? Is Sioux Falls Mayor Mike Huther going to run? Are there other Democrats that might want to run for governor? And then on the Republican side, and just last week here in Rapid City, I ran into Mark Mickelson with an aide, you know, a staffer. He's already got a staffer going around and campaigning for governor. Then you've got, as we talked about before, Marty Jackley is now saying publicly that he's very seriously looking at a run for governor. There's a lot of speculation about Congresswoman Kristi Noem. And the conversations that I have about politics are all about, you know, Mickelson has the money. Marty kind of has this platform that he's doing about anti-corruption. Kristi Noem has a lot of this retail kind of star power and this great track record in South Dakota. So on that side, there's a lot of discussion about who might come out on top of that kind of a primary. And then on the Democratic side, who's going to run and how's that going to shake out?
Seth, any word on Kristi Noem? Has she actually said anything to this point yet?
No, she was out here, you know, for the stock show, the annual Black Hills stock show, and I believe the question was asked then, and it, you know, she just gave kind of the standard, you know, wouldn't rule anything out type of answer, and she can't really, you know, afford publicly to be thinking or talking about, you know, 2018 governor's race when she's, you know, in the midst of a reelection campaign right now for the House, obviously, so. And that does put her at somewhat of a disadvantage. Obviously, she's got to focus on that while everybody else who wants to run in 2018 for governor are already basically, you know, hint that they're running and start laying the groundwork and have, you know, political action committees fundraising for them, as Mickelson has done. So yeah, I don't know, and maybe she hasn't even decided. We don't know. But it certainly would open up a lot of interesting possibilities, because if she would run for governor, then who would run for her House seat? And would that be a slot that even Stephanie Herseth Sandlin might want to get back into the House? Or would she run for governor? And, you know, would there be a way for Brendan Johnson to enter politics and run for House if Kristi Noem, you know, left that seat open? And who would run on the Republican side? So, as Denise said, that's, you know, there's a lot of intrigue with that election year coming up.
So, Seth, you spent the weekend at the Dakota Conference, right, at the Center for Western Studies in Sioux Falls, and there was a lot of talk about George McGovern. We talked about the McGovern dinner. Let's keep talking about George McGovern and the new biography. How was that conference?
It was great. Yeah, I attended a morning panel there. I was in the audience, and there was a panel discussion about the new biography on George McGovern by Thomas Nock. It's actually volume one of the biography with volume two yet to come. Mm-hmm. And sort of the highlight of the day, and Bob Mercer wrote about this, he was there as well covering the event, and a question came up for the panel discussing the McGovern book about who would George McGovern support for president if he were still alive today. And all the panelists gave sort of their thoughtful opinions about that, and then it came around to Emily Wanless from Augustana University, and she kind of had the quip of the day when she said he'd be running if he were still alive. And everybody laughed kind of knowingly about that because he was a man, obviously, of great ambition, and when Emily Wanless presented about the book and her impressions about the book on the panel, that was kind of the tone of her presentation, was that this was an incredibly ambitious man who was always looking to expand his influence. And anyway, when I was sitting there, it made me think immediately of 2008 when McGovern actually endorsed Hillary Clinton at first, and then about a month before the primary switched to Barack Obama, which I think was, you know, indicative of exactly what was said at the conference, that he was a guy that was pragmatic about always looking to for opportunities where he could exert his influence and raise his profile and have a platform to get to talk about things that matter to him. So I think he would support Hillary Clinton today because of that, because she's the front runner, and also because there's some ties between the Clintons and McGovern. But he would see that as an opportunity to maybe get some interviews again, talk about some things that matter to him, and raise his profile a little bit.
Denise, you want to add anything to that thought?
Well, I think all those comments are right on. You know, McGovern was known to be pretty liberal, and Bernie Sanders is pretty liberal, but there are also the ties to the Clinton family. So I would lean that he would probably support Hillary Clinton in the race.
Let's just quickly touch on education, because in Sioux Falls, on this side of the state, the teachers, the school board has come out and said, yep, we're going to give them a raise. This is what it is. We're sort of seeing how local school districts are rolling out the governor's education overhaul. Are you seeing anything West River or in any other communities about the early signs of how this is going to be implemented? Denise, you want to start with that?
Yeah, well, it's funny. Coach of my son's little league team is a teacher here in the district, and I was asking what's the mood, how's the morale, this, you know, and the answer came back that there's fear, there's anxiety among the ranks that, because they haven't said it yet, that somehow the money will get diverted away from teachers. So, you know, you got to feel for these poor teachers that they've been last for pay for so long that they can't even still quite believe that they're going to get this raise that's coming their way. And there's been some coverage locally of the school board discussions about some of these big plans to build new facilities here in Rapid City are getting scaled back in favor of teacher pay, but it's not an end deal yet, and I guess we'll just have to see. I think, you know, kudos to Sioux Falls for sort of laying the marker down for other districts. I think that shows some leadership over there, and we'll see how the other districts follow along.
Seth, any last words?
Yeah, just we've been a little slower to act here. Their Rapid City is going through a superintendent change right now. But one of the things that the administration talked about early that was kind of interesting was that it's great to have money for teachers, but this won't solve any of the underlying budget problems with buildings and programs and things like that, because the money is going to go to teachers. And that was one of the first reactions I heard from the administration, which we'll have to see what they do to, I guess, you know, keep their budget balanced, because paying teachers isn't going to obviously, you know, build a new building. So, and they still have that challenge.
So that's an indication of their thought process, if nothing else, which is why there's some anxiety amongst the teachers. That fits together then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
You've been listening to our Dakota Political Junkie, Seth Tupper, Enterprise reporter with the Rapid City Journal. Seth, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
And Denise Ross, editor with Black Hills Knowledge Network and South Dakota Dashboard. Denise, it's nice to talk to you again, as always.
Thank you, Laurie.